Once again at this time, Columbia's correspondents in London, Berlin, and Washington are ready to bring you the latest developments. And while we're waiting to hear from the CBS correspondent in London, Mr. Larry Lesueur, by transatlantic shortwave radio, here is a summary of news from other points. The Japanese press is taking a seemingly bold attitude toward the United States today, following the announcement of the three-power alliance. The Tokyo newspaper, believed to reflect the government's views, claims America's State Department has mismanaged its affairs so badly that it has made an enemy of Japan. At the same time, the Japanese press met the German envoy who negotiated, in proxy for Joachim von Ribbentrop, the three-power alliance as far as Japan is concerned. The envoy is Heinrich von Stahmer, and although he has been in Tokyo for some time, the government has prohibited mentioning his name. The effect of an alliance has even been spread to South America. From Buenos Aires, the United Press reports that Latin America fears the United States will be forced, because of the pact, into the war, with South America going to the victor. Another dispatch from Shanghai says that Japan and Russia may come to an agreement similar to the one made by Germany and Russia at the start of the war. Germany is reported to be the middle party. And now, for the report of Larry Lesueur in the British capital, we take you to London. Go ahead, London.
This is London, after a fairly light night. On our 21st all-night raid, the Germans devoted most of their time to merely circling around the center of the city. A number of fires were started, but police reports this morning show that only one central London and two East End districts were actually bombed. However, for the third night in a row, the suburbs got it, north, south, and southeast of the capital. The raid started last night in a sky as black as London ever saw. Fast German bombers zipped overhead and dumped showers of firebombs. Their blazes lit the sky for a while, but the London fire defenses were on the job fast. We could hear their fire guns all night as they streaked through the blacked-out streets. Then toward morning, most of the fires were completely out, and when that happens, the Germans seem to stop bombing. They just don't bother starting any more fires as beacons, because they know they'll have to leave the sky before sunup or else get shot down. The latest communique tells us that the score yesterday was 133 German planes destroyed against 34 British fighters lost. The communique adds that several other parts of Britain were bombed last night, including East Scotland and the Midlands. This may explain why London got it comparatively lightly last night. The Germans apparently have just enough night bombers to keep the pressure on London whenever they devote their attention elsewhere in Britain. It must not be forgotten that no matter how many night bombing planes the Germans possess, they have to give the crews a rest pretty often, just as the Royal Air Force does. Otherwise, the men will crack up. To illustrate how 8 million people of London are on the front line these nights and days, all the drivers and conductors of London's bus system are going to get protective helmets. They won't be exactly new to a lot of the busmen. Many of them now wear their World War decorations on their white smocks. We've had one air raid warning just after breakfast this morning. The planes came over high, but we have no details of damage yet. The Germans seem to be continuing their tactics of first trying to destroy aircraft factories here, and secondly, clear out the number of existing Royal Air Force fighters in the attempt. One of the prominent British air experts said this morning that the news that the United States is already sending more airplanes to Britain than are being lost in the Blitzkrieg sounds very encouraging, but Britain must avoid undue optimism. He says that, quote, nothing in America is at present fit for anything other than advanced training of pilots. He says Britain bought the American Lockheed Hudson just to train pilots to fly twin-engine jobs. But, and I'm quoting, with our talent for improvisation, we made the Hudson quite a useful reconnaissance machine and bomber. And we armed it in our curiously ingenious way until it became dangerous to attack. But it is not a modern airplane, unquote. This expert continues to say that German airline pilots have for years been recognized as equal to the best bad weather pilots in the world. He says German airplanes can continue to come over here in bad weather, get their position more or less fixed over industrial areas by radio from the German-occupied countries, and drop their bombs blind through clouds or fog. The only answer to that, he says, is bombers and more bombers to stop the German bombers at their source. Speaking of bombers, here's what the influential English magazine Airplane has to say about America's flying fortresses. I quote, "By British standards, the Boeing B-17 bombers are most poorly armed, and because of their size, should make easy targets in the air or on the ground. Their maximum speed of 268 miles an hour is too slow to offset their poor defense, and they would be easily shot down by day." I return you now to CBS in New York.
That was Larry Lasalle reporting from London. Back in New York, here is a dispatch from Rome. Two British airplanes bombed two points in Libya and killed two natives and wounded five Italians, a communique said today. Italian planes, it was asserted, shot down two British planes and probably three others. And now for the report of Edwin Hartridge in the German capital. Go ahead, Berlin.
This is Berlin. According to the reports we have here this morning from the DNB, air attacks of the German Luftwaffe against England are continuing on a large scale. We are told that in the last 36 hours, more than 1,000 tons of bombs have been dropped from German planes on targets in South and Middle England. The attacks are described as very heavy. And the DNB adds that yesterday afternoon and last night, the German Air Force large-scale attacks were directed against military objectives in South and Central England, particularly against harbors and industrial works. Strong forces of planes also raided London, dropping their bombs over a large area. The German radio news gives us further details. It states that great fires and violent explosions resulted from raids on London, and several ships were sunk in the dark areas, while quays and harbor facilities were badly damaged. And apart from London, this report states industrial objectives in Derby, Birmingham, Manchester, and Bristol were also attacked yesterday. Well, the harbors of Newcastle and Hull were also raided. In the Irish Sea, two convoys were scattered by a single flight of German bombers when the ships attempted to put into Liverpool, says this report. And the last airplane score we have from the high command is 75 British planes shot down, while 23 German planes are reported as missing. The attacks on London are continuing this morning, but we have no further details. We have some follow-up news regarding the signing of the, quote, military alliance, unquote, between Germany, Italy, and Japan in Berlin yesterday noon. Herr Hitler has awarded the Grand Cross of the Order of the German Eagle to the Japanese Foreign Affairs Minister, Monsieur Matsuoka, and to his Berlin Ambassador, Monsieur Kirisu. The newspapers in Berlin tell us that the pact has created, quote, an enormous sensation throughout the world, unquote. And the news of the German-Italian-Japanese alliance has, quote, exploded like a bomb in the United States, unquote. According to a DNB report in New York, certain sections of the American press, which are described as the war press, unquote, are hardly able to conceal their rage and consternation. Included in this category are those circles in America which have been attempting to prevent this alliance from coming into effect, states the DNB. However, in Berlin, the alliance is placed in another light. We are told that it is the natural marriage of, quote, three young people who know neither capitulation nor compromise, unquote. And the papers point out that all the peoples in the world who feel like the Germans, Italians, and Japanese about reconstructing a new world order, or who sympathize with such totalitarian aspirations, are invited to, quote, cooperate, unquote. And the papers further editorialize that this alliance is not directed against any single power, but just against those who oppose, quote, this revolution against an obsolete world, unquote. Thus, there is no direct mention of the United States as being the direct object of this major diplomatic development. But Berliners are not hesitant to admit privately that this alliance is directed to prevent the United States from carrying the war with Britain against these signatory powers. And there are reports which can't be confirmed, or which can be evaluated at this moment, that Spain may enter this group of Germany, Italy, and Japan within a week or two. We have been hearing reports that Spain will join the Axis powers in the war against Great Britain. Then suddenly, we discovered yesterday that it was Spain who joined the fold, it was Japan who joined the fold, and not Spain. Serrano Sunde, the Spanish delegate of General Franco, is reported to be staying on in Berlin, but he may go back to Madrid shortly to to make a personal report on these developments to his government. For one thing, the alliance is causing disturbance in the American colony in Berlin. Many people who I've talked to feel that they should now make preparations to return to the States. They don't know what may result, but they feel that there's a distinct possibility, as viewed from this capital, that the United States may enter the war. And the problem of getting home is a difficult one. The Spanish government will not issue transit visas to Americans who pass through Spain en route to Lisbon without referring each application to Madrid for special consideration. Then with Japan becoming a partner of the Axis, the Trans-Siberian route through Moscow to the Pacific was out of the picture. And that means exits from Petsamo, the Arctic port which freezes in the winter, and through the Balkans to some Mediterranean port, where it may soon be impossible to get a ship connection to the United States. This is Edmund Hartrich, our attorney out of Columbia, New York.
That was Berlin. Next, the news from our own nation's capital, as reported by Albert Warner. We take you now to Washington.
Another name, that of Lewis Johnson, former Assistant Secretary of War, crops up as a possibility for National Director of the Draft. Lieutenant Colonel Hershey and Judge Advocate General Gillian of the Army are other names which have been mentioned. Mr. Johnson, an effective executive when he was in the War Department, has retired to the private practice of law in West Virginia. But he's back in Washington today, and his presence here gives impetus to the speculation over his name. Certain divisional officers in the Selective Service Organization are quite frank in saying that their work is being held up by the delay in appointing a director. Plans can only be developed to a semi-final stage before they require the official approval of the head of the organization. If this situation is general, a bottleneck will develop at the director's desk because of the amount of material awaiting his sanction. The appointment may come today. One result of the Triple Alliance of Italy, Germany, and Japan was almost overlooked yesterday, but it's of a good deal of importance to congressmen, at least. The Triple Alliance undid the work of Vice President John Garner. It blasted his hopes to induce Congress to adjourn. In one day, the Vice President, apparently in line with the desires of President Roosevelt, did yeoman's work in the cause of adjournment, and then Hitler foiled Garner, too. With the crystallization of international danger, there were messages to Congress advising its members to stay on. Now, eager as many of the congressmen are to get back to their homes and political fences, a vote for adjournment seemed more of a political liability than campaigning under the handicap of commuting to Washington. Senator Thomas of Utah, an administration Democrat, said, "It's common sense that we stay. These are serious times. No president would want the responsibility of remaining on duty alone," he added. Unless there is another change of heart, the majority leaders of Congress will have the choice of either short 3-day recesses or a month's recess until just after Election Day. The initial reaction to the Triple Alliance, as was reported last night, had almost the opposite effect in Washington, if the object was either to deter the United States from aiding Great Britain or to stop the United States from exercising pressure against Japanese aggression. There will be no let-up in the efforts to stay Japan. There will be further aid to Britain. The transfer of big naval bombing planes comes to the front as a possibility. There was also this reaction, a belief in administration quarters that the treaty recognized the probability Britain would last through the winter and had rebuffed the initial threat of German invasion. There would have been no need for an alliance, no object in attempting pressure on the United States if Britain were about to fall, it was pointed out. The second conclusion is that the next drive of Germany and Italy and probably Spain will be directed at the British Empire in the Mediterranean. Secretary Hull referred yesterday to the fact that the Triple Alliance merely put into writing an already existing situation. It's a fact that Mr. Hull for 2 or 3 years now has been pointing to the way in which the aggressive powers have played together. There's a story that Mr. Hull summed it up neatly in private to a friend in these words: "If you pull the tail of one of them, you can hear the other grunt." We return you now to New York.
Once again, Columbia has brought you direct reports by transatlantic shortwave radio from its correspondents in London and Berlin, as well as a report from our nation's capital. This morning you heard from Larry Lasseur in London, Edwin Hartridge in Berlin, and Albert Warner in Washington. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.